Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Mr. President, aliens have arrived and are threatening to blow up the planet if we don't give them our most prized treasure. What should we do? Enact the D-Day Protocol. But sir, do it! It's our only hope! Sir, the protocol says in the event of alien invasion to press this red button and to make sure to go to multiplayersquad.com to help save humanity in their time of need. Alright, Private, press that button and let's see what happens. Boop!
Glory to mankind! Welcome to the Multiplayer Gaming Podcast. Today is a Deep Dive Monday, and we are going to be breaking down all things Nier Automata. We've had some internal debating on the actual pronunciation of the game. I think that is correct, but I don't really know exactly for sure. But please take a moment to rate our podcast 5 stars and leave us a written review if your podcast app allows. And also, if you love the show and want more content, you can support us on Patreon, and at any tier of support, you will get access to the Squadcast, which are bonus episodes that release the first and third Tuesday of every month. I am your host, Paul, the 2B of this episode. I'm joined here by two other Yorha soldiers. First up, we have our 9S, the loyal and faithful friend who will help you in any way you need. And no, I will never call you nines. It's Michael.
Oh, I thought we were going to intro Josh's beard that time as the loyal and faithful friend that never leaves our side or our chin. But thank you. I wish you would call me nines because, let's face it, you know, I'm not quite a 10 myself, but nines, pretty close. That's me.
Ooh, one of the cringiest parts in this game. So when are you going to call me nines? And it's just crickets.
Yeah.
2B wants nothing to do with it.
Yep.
All right, and then joining us, we have our A2. Obviously, this has to be him. The rogue android on the run, refusing to conform to the expectations and the orders from his superiors. It's Josh.
I never realized the similarities there. But you are absolutely correct, man. The mysterious, rule breaker, absolutely. Rogue, I like all of it.
This one seemed pretty easy to me. I don't know that I'm 2B in any way, shape, or form.
You're Pascal,
but at least 9S
Paul.
And A2 were.
Yeah,
I'm Pascal.
There you go.
That probably would be more fitting.
You're like the super nice, just I love you instantly.
Robotic.
You know what I mean? Like smart, kind.
Yeah. Instantly not questioning my choice to befriend you. And I don't know, I can't see anywhere as I'm wearing a freaking blindfold. So whatever. Oh, wait, does that mean something?
Very nice.
Like, I don't know.
All right, so guys, we are covering Nier Automata, and we are doing this because of Black Star DQ, who is one of our legendary supporters. If anyone out there does not know, if you support us on Patreon, there are different perks for different tiers, and one of the coolest ones is at Legendary. So obviously it comes at a high price tag, it's $100, but as long as you do that for 1 month, you get to pick any game, and Josh, Michael, and I will all buy it, and we will play it, and we will talk about it on the show. And so we do want to give another thank you to Black Star DQ for picking this one for us to play.
Heck yeah.
Also, thank you to Black Star for subsequently becoming an epic supporter of the show, because as a lot of people do, they join Legendary so that they can pick a game and they get those perks, and a lot of those perks stay permanent. But then they went to the Epic tier to continue to support the show after that. So huge shout out. Thank you, Black Star DQ. We are glad to have you.
Heck yeah. And hey, we're not complaining. Anyone that wants to go Legendary supporter and just cut off forever, we still love you. But it's really cool to see Black Star DQ. A special thank you to you.
Yeah, Black Star and Ace of Shame, Legendary and Epic.
That's right.
Doubling up. Yeah, so Blackstar had said that he randomly picked this game up one day at a GameStop, just saw it, thought, why don't I try this game with this weird title, and fell in love with it. And I think all three of us kind of said, I don't know that this necessarily was on any of our radars to buy. We solely played this only because of Blackstar, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun to talk about.
Yes, he was fairly blown away by the cover art.
Yes. And before we hop into Nier here, Josh, will you tell the people a little bit about our upcoming community night?
We've got trivia!
Yeah.
We've got, so we have, we found a great way to do trivia in our Discord server. We are going to have a trivia night on July 1st, which is coming up, man. That's this week. If you're listening to this episode, that's this Friday. At 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, that's 9 p.m. Eastern. And then it's going to take place on our Discord server. It's all going to be in the text-based channel. We know that we have a lot of lurkers. We have mad love for our lurkers, so you are more than welcome. You'll feel right at home. But the trivia is going to be based on video game knowledge. And we've tried to kind of spread that around to, you know, just different genres and questions. Some of the questions will be about the show, and things like that, but it should be an absolute ton of fun, great community event. And then we are giving away a pretty awesome prize, if I do say so myself. We are giving away a brand spanking new SteelSeries Stratus XL wireless controller. This thing is amazing. It's awesome. SteelSeries makes wonderful gear. And so this thing's going to be a phenomenal prize that's going to go to the winner of the trivia as well.
Yeah, and I listen, everyone out there listening to us. Listeners, I'm talking to you right now. I know you think that you have something better to do on a Friday night than get together with a bunch of nerds and take a multiple choice test. But listen, we're going to give you something for free if you win. So just show up anyways.
Yeah. And Josh, Michael, and I will be in a voice channel. And if you want to hop in there and just listen to us, we're going to talk a little bit about the trivia and the answers, some of the podcast history as we hit some of those questions. Should be a lot of fun for everybody.
Yeah.
So yeah, put that on your calendar, July 1st. We hope to see you all there. If you're not already in the Discord, there is a link in the episode description. It's totally free to join. You don't have to put in credit card info or anything. Totally free for anybody. And we hope that lots of you are able to make it there. Okay, we've got our orders from Yorha to deep dive Nier Automata. Let's do it. Okay, Nier Automata released in 2017. It is the sequel to Nier, which released in 2010. Automata currently goes for $40 on Steam, and it has sold over 6 million copies worldwide. And here is the description according to Steam. Nier Automata tells the story of androids 2B, 9S, and A2 and their battle to reclaim the machine-driven dystopia overrun by powerful machines. All right, now I will say here at the onset that we are going to be keeping things virtually spoiler-free here in the beginning. We are going to talk a little bit about the first like hour or two as far as the setup of the story. We're definitely going to talk about the combat and some of that. If it does get to a point that we're going to share story spoilers, we'll definitely make sure to let you guys know. That way we won't spoil things for you. Now, I know for me, this was my first experience with anything related to Nier. I think that's the same for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard of this series. Like, I've heard of Nier Replicant. I forget what the very first one was called. You know, I've heard of this series. I know nothing about it. So I was actually really excited when Blackstar was like, hey, I'm going to pick Nier Automata for you guys. And I was like, dude, this is great because I have zero idea what to expect on this game. I've not seen any gameplay on any of these. Mm-hmm. All I know is that this is a series that a lot of people really enjoy, and they've had a fairly newer release to PC for, you know, Nier Automata. And so I was actually very interested to check this out because it's like, never seen this series, heard a lot about it. Am I going to love it? Am I going to hate it? What's it all about? And I love that kind of, I love going in blind like that when somebody picks a game for us and it's like, dude, this is great because I never would have played this game otherwise.
Yeah, I absolutely have never heard of the series, had never heard of this game. Name sounded cool. Cover art, like people with swords and stuff. All right, I'll give it a shot. Also, you know, I had to. because we had a legendary supporter. But yeah, I'd never heard of this game, and I honestly probably I might not ever have heard of it. I mean, because there's let's say there's tens of thousands of games out there anyways. So, but really, really interesting. I'll tell you, I like to try new things, especially when it comes to food. And so I was like, cool, something different. I would have never tried it myself. So I love it when people pick games and I get to try something different.
Unless it's fruit, because as we learned this week, Michael hates fruit.
No fruit, no
he
good.
He hates all of them. He hates fruit pie. He hates fruit. Snacking on fruit.
There's
fruit
a lot no of people good. Think Michael's very weird.
Yeah, people were like, I didn't realize I was going to get trolled a little bit. People were in the Discord like, what's wrong with him? I need more explanation. I'm like, what more explanation do you need? I don't like any fruit. I like all vegetables.
Which is so weird, though, because most people say I don't like vegetables, but I like fruit.
I've just never had a sweet tooth, and I think most fruit is sweet, except for grapefruit. People say grapefruit is sweet. Grapefruit is sour and disgusting.
It's very sour.
Which is weird, because I love all fruit juices for the most part, except for grapefruit juice, because also still sour and disgusting in juice form. But yeah, no fruit. New games, though, yes. Games are not
new
fruit.
Games,
games are like vegetables.
Yeah, you know, Nier is one of those things where I had heard about it. I never played it, never saw any footage. I did not know that Nier was an offshoot of a whole nother series called Drakengard. I still to this day don't know anything about that series either, other than the fact that it spawned Nier. I guess Nier is like an alternate timeline from the end of Drakengard, something like that. So yeah, this was the first time that we actually played something related to Nier. So let's go ahead and set the stage a little bit about what this game is, or at least how the game presents itself in the beginning. Michael, you're kind of like the story lover of the group. Can you describe a little bit of the overall story as to how it's presented early on in this game?
Yeah, so essentially, I mean, humans are gone or are mostly gone. I still didn't figure out if humans exist at all in this world or not, or if we're all replicants. But essentially, all that's left is really these replicant robots that have this consciousness that is, upon death, transferred to another identical replicant body, which is a cool way to get past like dying in a video game. It's like a part of the story. Essentially, you play as one of these replicants, and there's something crazy going on, right? Like hundreds of years ago, aliens have taken over the Earth, and humanity's been basically forced to take refuge on the moon in a place called the Bunker. And these aliens have created these evil robots who live on the Earth. And essentially, so evil, like red eyes and everything. They look like little Humpty
Rocking
Dumpties.
Babies.
Yeah, Humpty Dumpty robots. Well,
they do look
robots.
Like Humpty Dumpties. That's
okay.
The best.
Yeah, little Humpty Dumpties. Like it's like an egg in like a cardboard tube, but it's all made of metal. I know because my sword clanks it and it makes a clank sound. So it's not cardboard; it's metal. But essentially, to take back the Earth, humans created these replicants years ago, decades ago, hundreds of years ago to fight on the surface, and to go. Not too far into the game, quickly we find out that things aren't necessarily as simple as originally presented, but we are there to clear the Earth of these evil Humpty Dumpty cardboard tube wearing alien robots.
I think that's a pretty good description. The only thing I'd add on top of that is that the game is supposed to take place in the year 12,000 AD, so this is very far into the future, which I thought was kind of interesting. And, you know, there's multiple ways that you can enjoy this game. You can just take it at surface level, where it's just a sci-fi robot alien adventure that has an interesting story. It also has an awful lot to say about God, philosophy, religion, life and death,
anger
and frustration at what has created you, whether or not you're willing to sacrifice things for a complete stranger. I mean, there's literally a point in this game where a robot reads from Nietzsche and also comments on that. So, like, this game really dives especially into a lot of philosophy. That side of things is probably a little too deep for our show, probably a little bit beyond kind of what we wanted to discuss. Maybe we'll touch on it a little bit. But I will say that I did find some elements of this game very thought-provoking, maybe even inspirational at times. I didn't always agree with the worldview of the game, which is fine. But you can enjoy it both ways. If you want to just have a fun surface level adventure, it's great. If you're also curious to see what it has to say about life, then it also kind of dives into that side of things as well.
Yeah, this game gets very deep, and it doesn't get deep until you play it for a little while, which is very interesting to me because I know when we first started playing, and we'll get into some of the gameplay stuff here in a little bit, but I was caught off guard by a lot of the gameplay stuff. I was like, oh, this is an interesting mix of stuff. But then as you play the game, you get these little snippets of some of the, you know, the worldview and what they're starting to kind of poke at a little bit. And then as you get further and further along and into subsequent playthroughs, it starts getting real deep.
They hit with it hard.
Yeah. And that's a big surprise. And I think that's where a lot of people that are massive fans of this series really start to find their footing, because that's when it goes beyond just being like, hey, this is a neat game and, you know, has fun gameplay and stuff like that, into like, whoa, like if you get into that, I think that's where a lot of people start calling this game like a masterpiece and stuff like that, because it's like there is a ton of depth in that that's under the surface that you don't necessarily see right away.
Yeah, myself being someone who really thrives on wanting story, wanting to think about a game, I say it too many times on this show that I like to cry at video games. This one did not make me cry. Spoiler, maybe a second playthrough with a different perspective or whatever. But the whole thing is, I gotta be straight up. When I first started playing this game, the first couple hours, it felt like work. I'm like, I do not want to play this game. It was not my type of game. I'm not an action game player. And then we started getting hit with these hints of like little extra here and there. And then slowly as the game goes, you just all of a sudden get dumped on with like philosophy, story. And like there's religion in the game, but it's not like preachy religion. It's that the like there's characters in the game that are following these things, and it all kind of goes into how you think as a replicant and how you think. I'm trying to get too far into it, but it's when I said that things aren't as simple as originally presented, like very quickly I was like, I am now intrigued by this game that seems like it's a straight up button mash fest to think. And I really appreciated that, to be like, hey, now I started to actually want to play the game, which all came from this philosophy and the religion and the story in the game, which I was not at surface level expecting at all.
Yeah, I know when I first started playing, I thought I knew exactly where the game was going, because they send you out, go kill these evil robots, right? Like, this is literally your first mission, and you start running around, and the robots like say that they're scared and they're running away from you and they're like crying. And the whole time 9S is like really hitting you over the head, being like, wow, these evil aliens, these evil machines, they really know how to sound like humans. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we get it. Right. Where do you draw the line? Where, you know, are robots with AI? Are they actually people? Are they alive? And I thought the game was going to look at that, because that's like so many other video games.
Right.
But this game goes way deeper into that, where it has a lot to say about human existence, even though the entire game you're playing as androids who are fighting against machines, but it still goes into an awful lot about humanity and existence. And, you know, there's a lot to chew on in this game.
It is weird that you might not actually encounter an actual human in this entire game, and mm-hmm. you introspectively think about humanity the entire time you're playing the game. Just interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that tells you a little bit about the base story. Let's talk about gameplay. All right, now let's start at the very beginning of the game. All right,
Josh, intro?
Yeah, Josh, did you know we would be playing asteroids for the first 20 minutes of this game?
Dude, I will say the beginning of this game caught me 100% off guard. Because I told you, I hadn't seen footage. I had heard of the title of the series, and I knew that it existed. And I felt like, for some reason, I knew that there was fighting. Maybe it's like Michael said, the cover art and seeing swords or something. So I was like, I thought this was like a game with like action combat or something. But you feel like you're in a shoot-em-up. And I was like, this is great. I haven't played a shoot-em-up game in forever. Right. Like, is that what this game is? No, and then it is definitely not a shoot 'em up game or a space game. What is? Isn't that a shmup? I can't remember. What do you call it?
Like the side scrollers,
right?
Yeah. Or Galaga. That's the first 20 minutes.
But no, so you're thrust into this intro prologue kind of sequence where, you know, the game's kind of introducing itself. It's introducing the characters and some of that stuff. And what I found hilarious was that this prologue was hard, man. You fight a big boss thing in the beginning, and I didn't have a grasp of the controls. I didn't have a grasp of the fighting style. I didn't have a grasp of dodging and anything that was important in this game. The shooting sequences where you're flying around in a spaceship, just blasting hundreds of little flying robot things was great. I was like, but what is this game? I think was my initial question within like the first 20 minutes of playing it.
It was funny because legitimately I bought the game on my PS4 and Josh and Paul played on their computers on the PC. And in Discord, I was, because on the PS4, you can't buy the base game anymore. I had to buy like the Game of the Year edition or some special edition. It was like $30. And I messaged Paul and Josh in Discord and was like, does this game start out like Asteroids? Am I playing the right game? Did I buy the right game? Because this doesn't at all seem like what you guys are talking about. Because they had like a week head start on it because I had family in town and stuff like that. So I started a little bit later, but it was hilarious. I was like, is this the game? I was totally taken aback a little bit by it.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit like Star Wars, where instead of being like red leader to gold leader, it's like, you know, 9S to 2B to 02 to, you know, whatever the other, you know, character names are.
And much like Star Wars, they all die.
Yeah, there's a lot of death in the beginning. So, yeah, my biggest issue with the prologue is that there's no save point.
Oh,
so you cannot save this game whenever you want. Now, I died not to the giant colossal thing that you fight in your ship, but I did die to the like saw blade boss at the very
end. That's the hard part.
The Goliath?
And I died on that once. So I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to play this whole thing. Okay, but now I know where to go and I'm going to, you can actually like jump past enemies. You don't have to fight everybody if you don't want. I raced all the way to the end. My character got stuck in the ground and I couldn't move. So the saw blade just goes right over me and killed me again. And I think I even messaged Josh when I was like, please tell me I can save right after this fight because I have to do it a third time.
This is where Paul DMs me. This is what I love, man, is Paul messages me and he's like, I might not play this game.
Yes. It was like a whole hour lost because of a bug. And it was the only time I ever had that. The whole rest of the game was smooth sails.
And I did. It's funny because, the prologue is long and there is no save point.
And it's hard.
And it's like a straight hour of gameplay where if you die at any point, you have to start all over again. Now, like, you know, yes, you can, you realize you can just run past enemies, but I felt bad for you, Paul, because I was like, oh no. Like, I didn't die, but I came close a few times. And then right after the prologue, you can save. And then saving is not an issue pretty much for the rest of the game. But it was just funny to see Paul's, like, anger at dying once and then dying again and then being like, I hate this game.
no joke. When I went through that part, I died to the saw blade guy as well. And I'm like, I already don't want to play this game. Before I started, I literally went into the settings and said, sweet, I'm going from hard mode past normal mode down to easy mode to get through this hour again. I'm like, I'm flying. I do not want to do this right now. I went right into easy mode and flew past all of it and then put it right back to the second most difficult. Because I default always on the second most difficult mode. I never go hardest because I think hardest is I don't want to hate myself. I've played Elden Ring. I don't want to hate myself by playing something too hard. But I'm like, I am not above saying that I've already gotten through this. I'm going easy mode. I do not want to waste another hour to this part again. I'm going right past it. And I did. And then I got to the save point and put it right back to second most hard.
Very nice. So once you get past the initial mech flying, which they do return to later in the game, so this does come back every once in a while, but for a majority of the game, that's where you do get to use your weapons. Josh, you want to talk a little bit about how the rest of the gameplay works as far as combat?
Yeah, so the rest of the game is your standard third person, run around the world, come across monsters. It is action-based combat, so you know, you've got your light attack, your heavy attack, your jumps, your dashes, all fairly standard fare there. There's nothing in the combat in this game that stood out to me as necessarily unique in that regard, with the exception of you have your pod. And your pod is basically this little hovering robot that follows you around the entire game. You can hang from it if you jump off a building that's way too tall so you don't take fall damage. But the pod has like a little machine gun built into it. And so what's really neat about the combat in this game is that you can do all of your melee combat with your different weapons and your combos and stuff like that. And there's definitely button combos where you can do different things. And based on the weapon that you have, your move sets are different and stuff like that. But the pod can actually shoot bullets. And what's neat is you can do both at the same time. So if you're just squeezing the trigger nonstop, your little pod guy is just machine gunning everything. Mm-hmm. You're wailing around with your weapons and stuff like that. And, you know, it's kind of chaotic almost in a way.
It's crazy chaotic.
Yeah. The pod also, you can equip it with, different
like an ultimate
kind of like ult. I forget,
a special ability.
I can't remember the name of it now. It's I forget what the anyway, they have a term for it, right? Where it's like, you know, it has like a giant charge up laser. It can put a shield around you. It can give you a giant hammer, so it can do all these different like ultimate type things that are on like a longer cooldown. But that's the gist of like the combat in this game. I did get some different weapons. I thought it was very cool that depending on the weapon sets that you have, and you can freely change between two of the sets. I got a big giant axe at one point where, you know, she would swing the axe and then throw it kind of in a circle and it would kind of boomerang around and hit people. But then I got a spear at one point, and then it was cool because she would kind of plant the spear in the ground and then like kick everybody in a circle around the spear. So the move, there was actually some pretty cool animations, some pretty cool like fighting styles that were involved in the game. The only downside is you kind of just wind up mashing buttons. Like the combat is not the combat's not so strategic that you really need to like put together combos and time your dashes really, really well and stuff like that, because it's very easy to just use healing items. It's a neat combat system, but it's not like the standout in this game by any means.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the only time that I really had to get strategic was there was a lot of boss fights where I had to time a lot of things differently, and I kind of had to put together some combos. I did like, though, that you could easily switch between weapon sets, so I was running around with four completely different weapons because my main set was always like the katana starter that I got to level 3 real fast, and then I had the big broadsword, and then I used the spear and an axe in the other set because you could do all those things and then just quickly push the up button on the D-pad and swap it, which was kind of cool. Did you guys ever get the random pod that was in the middle of the desert that gave you two special abilities?
No.
I fished one up.
Okay.
I fished up a second pod.
I found a second pod in the middle of the desert, and it had two special abilities. One of them was like, it would just target all these things in the screen and put boxes around them, and it would send out like this Tony Stark-esque like these,
missile
these missiles at him. Yeah, it was so cool. And then it had the big hammer by default. That was fun. I thought that kind of breathed a little bit of extra life into the combat. Was I had to change weapons often because the combat, like you said, it's a button mash extraordinaire. There's really nothing special to it. I found myself more wanting to jump and dash in the air to make the game seem more fun to play with the combat, to get more artsy with it and make it look cooler than the actual necessity to actually have to jump and dodge and dash.
Well, the funny thing about the combat in this game is that it intentionally starts off relatively easy and it ramps up. And we're going to talk about how this game requires multiple playthroughs. It intentionally ramps up to the point that it is impossible at the end of the game. And that is by design. It's built into the story. It's built into the message of the game. But in the beginning, I was kind of worried because you can press a button to focus on a singular enemy. And I would hold the button for my pod to shoot it. And you can just run circles around any enemy and they'll die. And in the beginning, I was like, am I accidentally cheesing all of these fights? Because nothing is hitting me. But then soon you get, you know, harder boss battles and then subsequent playthroughs, and things do ramp up a lot. So it is kind of funny how the combat works. Similarly to you guys, I thought it was fun. I thought the combat was fine. I don't know that it necessarily had anything crazy unique, but what I did really love is the chip system. And we got to spend a little bit of time talking about this.
Before you go into that, though, I have to say that I completely missed something that you said, and I have to comment on it. Of course, Of course, Paul fished up a new pod. Listen, if you're new to this podcast, if this is your first episode,
I love fishing.
Paul will find a way to fish. I guarantee if there's a game out there that has a mod that is not supposed to be a fishing game, Paul will mod it just to be able to fish in the game. The fact that I found my extra pod in the desert somewhere and you fished one up does not surprise me at all. It's hilarious. I did not fish one time in this game because I'm
didn't
like
fish
fishing
at all.
I couldn't figure it out, and I'm like, I'm out of here. It'll make me fish if it makes me want to fish. It didn't, so I didn't fish. But that's hilarious. Now we can talk about the chips, but I thought it was funny.
Any game that will let me fish, farm, and cook, I'm 100% in, and I'll do it every time. I'm totally into it. This game, and I know that we're not really talking about the fishing, you can fish up sharks, which is wild. So I would throw out my pod, because you send the pod into, like, if you go to the ocean, you can fish in the ocean. And sometimes it would literally pull up what I can only imagine would be like a 700-pound shark, and then it just disappears into your inventory, which always makes me chuckle. It's like, how am I carrying these eight sharks that are now in my inventory?
Paul, where are your pockets to be? Where are you keeping those pockets?
Yeah. I was only disappointed that I couldn't cook all these fish. That's what I really wanted to do, but they don't let you do that. All right, so yeah, let's talk about the chip system. Basically, long story short, instead of having like classes or a skill tree, what you end up finding out in the world are computer chips. And since you are an Android, it only makes sense that you can swap out your hardware. So the game gives you a certain capacity of like chip space, and then you can start to plug in or unplug various chips to give you different bonuses. So what's really clever is that even things that are very basic to the UI, like being able to see the enemy health bar, that is a chip that is installed into your hardware. Now, it's only one space. It's very cheap. I always left it in there. Similarly, how much damage you do for every swing or for every hit of your gun, that's another chip. But then they start to get much more advanced. Were there any chips that you guys thought were kind of neat?
It's interesting, too, with this chip system, because the stronger the ability, the more space the chip takes up. So they definitely do a really neat job of balancing out how good this ability or perk is versus how much space it takes up. And it's like you said, even the UI elements, you know, they take up chip space. And so if you don't want to see your damage numbers, you can remove that chip if you want to. It even has an OS chip, and it says, hey, if you remove this, you'll die because this is your operating system as the Android.
Right.
And so it gives you full control over your character and how you want to do this. Some of the chips that I found, and I think what helped me out a lot in the combat, was the, you get healed from damage that you do, and you get healed from enemies that you kill.
Yep.
And I made sure I slotted those because I am an aggressive like combat person. I don't really want to focus a ton on defense. And so for me, just wailing into these robots or this boss fit my play style and allowed me to heal up and things like that. There's a plethora of different chips though. I mean, you get run speed chips, a crit chance chips,
fishing spot chip, like 2,500 gold to, it'll show you where all the fishing spots are on the map.
Yep, sure.
There was one of those.
Oh, dude, my favorite chip was where it would automatically use your heal items when you would drop below a threshold.
Yep.
Dude, healing in this game was not terribly easy on controller because it was always at minimum two buttons. Yep. You'd have to cycle with the D-pad and then press, I think it was B, in order to activate it.
Mine was circle
on like,
PlayStation.
Dude, it's hard to be dodging boss battles while trying to heal. Now, it took up a lot of space, but I loved... By the way, I spent all of my early money on increasing my chip size so I could equip all these things.
Yeah, that was 100% what I spent my money on. I think I bought one weapon.
No, I started early on by buying a second weapon because I realized I had like 25,000 money and I was like flying through it. And then I bought like 100 medium heals and I didn't use.
Oh my goodness.
It's 99. You can carry 99 of them. So I spent all my money. And then after that, I went over to the other vendor and I was like, oh shoot, this is my skill tree
cool
essentially
stuff.
Is the chips. And so everything after that was chips. And I think maybe I bought another weapon later on when I had like 100,000 because I, you know, you give me an open world, you give me side quests, I'm doing the side quests, and I did a lot of side quests and that was a lot of money, but you know, it's mostly chips after that.
So Michael just went with like the Diablo model of just mashing the potions.
Give me
the whole
potions.
Time.
And that's exactly how I play Diablo. It's exactly how I do it.
Oh, yeah. I thought the chip stuff was very cool, and it seemed like a precursor to Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk has a somewhat similar system where you get a certain number of mem chips, and you can use, you know, more powerful abilities. But I thought that was really clever and pretty neat.
Yeah, it's all based off Johnny Mnemonic.
Exactly.
Oh, what a good movie.
And wait, I don't know if you guys ever tested it. I did for a little bit just to see how it works. But you collect a ton of chips that you can only equip if you are on easy mode. And yeah, this includes auto dodging,
yep,
auto attack, auto weapon swap. And if you put them all on, like, you're just watching the world's most amazing player ever take over your character. All you can do is walk around and it will automatically dodge everything and kill everything in your path.
So what, so is it just story mode at that point?
Yeah, it's literally, it's basically just story mode.
Gotcha.
Yep, yeah, for sure. One of the things about the chip system that's cool too is you get, because you wind up getting duplicate chips, you get these chips that have like plus marks next to them. And so you can combine them to make them better, but they take up more space. And so the higher quality chip that you find, you can combine them. But if you find a really high quality chip, it doesn't take up as much space. So if you find two high quality chips and you combine them, you get like double the effects, but not double the space requirements, which I thought was a really neat system. And then you can actually have two different chipsets. So you can build your character for traversal, which I actually used. To where I put all like movement enhancing chips and like the dash, you know, reducing chips and stuff like that on one chipset. And then I had like a combat chipset because it's so easy to switch between them on the fly. So I thought that like upgrade system and the ability to swap between the two was a really neat kind of built in perk to the game as well.
Yeah, funny thing is, here's Michael's stupid hour again for a little bit. Yeah, I just called myself dumb. The world is not enormous, but it becomes significantly smaller about a quarter or a third of the way through the game when you're able to teleport. The first chips that I ever upgraded, because I didn't know you could teleport later on, was to max out my run speed. So, because I'm like, back and forth, back at Pascal's Village again. Oh, my goodness. And then I realized that I had spent way too much space. And so then I kind of accidentally did the same thing that you did, Josh, where I'm like, this is my run chipset and this is my combat chipset. Yeah.
Oh, nice. And if that sounds overwhelming, the game will also automatically put in sets for you. You just say, yep, I want it to be combat focused or defensive focused, and it'll just auto plug in what the game says is the best.
And build. You can so tell you can 9S do to do the same thing too, which is great because we haven't even hit on that. You have a companion the whole time you're playing. You have a partner. You have a second robot that plays with you, a replicant, whatever it's called. And you can also hold down, I think it's B button for you guys, it was circle for me, and tell him, hey, I want you to go more defensive, more balanced, more aggressive, whatever you want, just like your own chipset. And by the way, I did pretty much most of the time because I didn't want to deal with the chipset. Towards the end of the game, I pretty much just told it to pick for me, because you also have that option where it basically just says, optimize my chipset for me based on balance. So that's what I did.
Especially at that point where you've got, you know, dozens and dozens of chips. Yeah. It's hard to sort through.
Now, did we, we kind of jumped right into gameplay and combat and stuff like that, but did we even talk about, like, this is an action RPG with, like, you know, quests and worlds and you know, side quests and that kind of stuff? Because I don't know. I think
it's an open world action RPG button masher.
Yeah. And so this is, I mean, honestly, this is an RPG. Now, it's action based, but you do have a hub. There's a camp that you wind up finding, and that's kind of your hub for most of the world that you're in. The world has different zones. So you start off, you know, in this kind of abandoned cityscape. You'll go to the desert. You'll go to the forest and some other areas and stuff like that that unlock as you play. Dude, that amusement park is weird, man. It really is.
You can ride roller coasters in this game.
And so, you know, you do wind up talking to characters that give you quests, and you can get side quests, and, you know, they'll say, hey, you got to go over here and rescue this, you know, scientist, or we got a distress signal from somewhere over there. You need to go do that. So there is a lot of, you know, running from one place to another. Like Michael said, you can teleport using these vending machines, which is weird.
Yeah. You know, and it literally is a vending machine. It's got the little circles, the snacks in it.
Yeah.
But it makes sense as an android, right? Like, you're uploading your consciousness into the cloud, and then it's pumping into another body coming out of another vending machine. So it's a clever way to do fast travel that makes sense.
But this is a fully fledged RPG. It's just has action based combat. You know, but yeah, you got weapons and you don't really get armor, do you? I don't remember armor in this game.
No, it's just a skirt and a kind of shirt.
Once you count the chips. Right. Some of the chips are defensive.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't remember if we mentioned that or not. I don't think we did, but just to kind of give you an idea, so like a holistic view of what this game actually is. Combat is a huge part of it. And you know, we already kind of mentioned that some of the combat is as a spaceship, just like Space Invaders shoot 'em up type combat as well. But
It is also, I mean, it's open world. I mean, you don't have to, at some point, you can just go do your own thing if you want to, you know, and go run around and go explore areas.
The only exception I have with that is I did not find anything off the beaten path in that regard.
I found my second pod.
There's some optional bosses. There's nothing really worth
it's
going
kind of
out
a
your way
desolate
for.
World, though. I guess it's not. And maybe I think it's that way intentionally because we're talking about, like, you know, it's Earth at 12,000 AD and robots have killed everything. You know, so I think it's intentional, but it definitely feels barren. This is not like Skyrim where if you just wander around, you're going to find tons of stuff to do.
But the game does do a very good job of guiding you to your next objectives. Like, none of your side quests are really far away, and you always know where you're supposed to go on your main storyline, which is something that I do complain about sometimes in other quote-unquote, air quotes, open world games, where it's like, which one of these is my main story? Where am I supposed to be going? You're very clearly driven to do the things that you do in the main story, and it's very clearly even marked on your map as one dot means side quest, four dots means main quest, and you just know where to go, which is kind of nice. But yeah, they're right. There's not a lot of off the beaten path stuff. You can go wander off, but it's mostly just to kill more monsters or more alien Humpty Dumpties and get more experience to level your character up. That's about it.
Can we talk about how terrible the map is?
The map is not great, and it doesn't zoom out terribly well. Yeah.
I got lost a couple times not being able to see where the quest was. I don't know if it was just a bug because this is a PC port or what, but there was a couple times where I had no idea where to go. And I had to actually wander around a little bit and then went, you know, I haven't explored over here. Let me go over there. And then lo and behold, that's where the quest was. And it was like, okay, thank you.
I didn't like how on your main map, it would show you your objectives. But then when you go into the teleport map, it wouldn't. And so I'd have to hop back and forth a lot. Like, teleport map, shoot, which camp was it? Okay, back to the main map. Let me back out by pushing the back button four times and then go look at that. Yeah, the map was not great. And it was very, I don't know, it looked like a... It looked like a Windows 3.5 video game map.
Did you guys ever talk to the character that's in the refugee camp where you can ask them questions about the game itself?
Yes. Yeah.
And one of the questions is, which is very clever, and it talks about, like, hey, how come I can't save whenever I want? And, hey, the map is hard to read. And I actually asked him that, and he goes, well, that's as good as the map gets.
Yep.
I was like, wait a minute. Like, you guys know people are complaining about this. You put a character in the game for me to complain about the map, and then you basically say this is as good as the map you're going to get. That part made me chuckle, man.
I only had one really frustrated part in the map, and it was near the end where I was supposed to go to a subterranean area, and I didn't know that. And I'm standing, I'm like, I am here. What am I supposed to do? It doesn't show you caves. It doesn't show you entrances. You're just supposed to figure it out. And I'm like, but
hop down
I
that
am
hole
standing
in the ground.
Here. Yeah. And then, but again, I knew, okay, I'm just going to wander over here. And then all of a sudden, the little pod, A1 steak sauce, what's his name? The little pod guy? With
Josh.
What's Josh's name again?
I don't remember. Pod. Well, they're all pod numbers, aren't they? Like,
yeah, I think it's pod
041.
Well, anyways, the pod's like, ooh, we're in the area where where this person was last seen. I'm like, okay, cool. I think I'm in the right spot now. Let me just keep going down this area. And sure enough, there was a cave down there.
All right. There are still a lot of things to talk about here, but we do have to mention the fact that the game has a whopping 26 endings. Now, there are five real endings, right? A, B, C, D, and E. And then there are 21 additional endings that are more or less game over screens that you can hit in this game. Now, setting aside the main endings, all right, were there any of the novel side endings that you found during the game or any that you thought were pretty funny? Because I had one that hit me by surprise.
The removing the operating system chip that says, if you remove this, you'll die. It was pretty hilarious because it's like,
it's true.
It's 100% true. Like, yep. You pull the chip out, you're like, I don't believe this. Like, and then you pull the chip out and it's like, hey, game over, you're dead.
Yeah. For me, I hit a really funny one where you go to Pascal's village and then he tells you to go to the next area. Now, one thing about this game that's very confusing is, and I love the fact that it does it, but it makes direction hard to know, is that the game will randomly put you into a 2D side scroller view. And then all of a sudden it goes back to three dimensional running around wherever you want.
I loved it. I do actually love what they do with the camera in this game.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. But I thought I was going the correct direction when Pascal says go to this next village, and I went the wrong way.
Oh,
and
I got a game over screen.
It popped up and said to be decided. I don't remember verbatim, but it's like to be decided that she was no longer going to look into this next village and decided to walk off into the horizon. And then like I unlocked ending T or something like that. And it was like, oh, I didn't even do that on purpose. Like sometimes if you just go in the wrong direction, you might accidentally get a game over screen.
Yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
I didn't see any. It's funny because I knew the game had multiple endings. We talked about it without going into details because we didn't want any spoilers. I finished the game and I was like, I don't see any place where you could have a different ending in this game. It's the one ending. And then sure enough, it's stuff like what Paul was talking about, where you just accidentally walk off or you're given a self-destruct. And I never tried it. I accidentally almost did one time. And I'm like, well, if I self-destruct, am I dead or pull the chip out? But I never found anything else. And then later on, you figure out that like, okay, it's all based on replayability. If you play through the second time, you get a different play through all this stuff, but I didn't find anything. And so we're like, what ones did you find? I'm like, nothing. I got ending A.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So when you play the first time, the game ends kind of suddenly. I mean, not really. It wraps up certain elements, but there are still dangling plot devices that aren't resolved. And
I wasn't expecting that to be the end yet. No.
Yeah. So the game kind of hits you. All of a sudden you realize you know, quote, beat it. But then the game pops up and says Square Enix has an announcement. The story doesn't end here. Please play through multiple times. It will unlock new parts of the story. And so in the game, you do have to do multiple playthroughs in order to finish the game. If you only play through the game once and get ending A, you've really only played through, I don't know, maybe 35, 40% of the game. You have to play through multiple times, and this is how you're going to forward the story. Now, I think that's a really cool idea in theory. I think where they really kind of messed this up is that almost the entire first playthrough, 2B and 9S are together and fighting together. There are times that the characters are separated. And the second playthrough is from the perspective of 9S. So you're going through a lot of the exact same areas, fighting the exact same bosses. The combat's a little different because 9S can hack into things and he only equips one weapon instead of two. But I think for a lot of people, they start playing playthrough two, realize that a lot of it coincides with playthrough one, and then they give up. Really, it's playthrough three when the game then really hits you with all the reveals and the furthering of the story.
I thought it was very interesting because it's like you said, when your first playthrough, you kind of know you're getting close to the end of the game or what you think is the end of the game. And then you beat it and you kind of go, oh, I beat it. Like, okay. And then it straight up tells you, hey, you have not seen everything there is to see. This is only a part of the game. Please play through again. It will change. It'll be worth it. So then it's like you play through as 9S. And for me, that was a little off-putting, man, because it's like you said, Paul, I feel like a solid 60% of that was just rehashing everything I had already done. The only times it was different was the parts in the game where you're separated from 2B. And then, so yes, you do absolutely get that different perspective because now you're playing as 9S. And so, you know, the combat's not as good. The hacking sequences are like an old school 80s arcade shooter.
I did not like the hacking.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's interesting that they added yet another gameplay element on top of this action RPG spaceship side, like shoot 'em up type game. Now they've got like a centipede, like old school asteroids type game
right.
built into it, you know? So it's like, yes, they
shoot the bubbles.
They tried to mix it up a little bit, but I'm like, dude, I just spent 12 hours doing all of this. This is not interesting enough to make me want to put in another 10 hours, you know? But to its discredit, once you beat the second playthrough, that's where things really start to take off when we talk about this game being a masterpiece and getting into a lot of that existentialism, you know, crisis, you know, philosophy type stuff. And that's where the game really starts to get really deep. And it's like, why did you do that? Right. You know what I mean? Like, just be a 30-hour game. If you would just put it all together, I would have been hooked from the beginning. But when you tell me, like, hey, you beat it, but now you got to play it again, but it's going to be a little bit different, like, it really puts me off in that regard. But then it's like, the cake's not a lie in this game, because if you're willing to put in the time and do three or four or five, or even see the very last playthrough, you know what I mean? Like, that's where the payoff is. And I know that you can chapter select. And so once you get to that third and fourth and fifth playthrough, you don't have to put in 10 hours every time. But it's like, dude, why did you put this barrier in front of me like this?
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. It's why for over 40 years, we have been providing quick and quality service. And with free instant estimates at JiffyLube.com, you can know what to expect, even before your visit. Visit your local Jiffy Lube. We'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more. Visit JiffyLube.com to find coupons and start an instant online estimate.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. Yeah, it's kind of like that. I read a book series kind of the same way, where, you know, it's called Old Man's War. First book's amazing. Second book's amazing. Third book is the second book from a different person's perspective. And I got halfway through it and was like, I'm done. And that's kind of how this is, except in that case, there was really no fourth or fifth book or anything like that. I think there's enough in this game for me to want to say, I'm willing to get through it, but as me, Michael, who likes story, to get through this again, and it's not a long game, so I could do it again. Maybe I go on easy mode and put in those chips that let me do everything on my own and just go to sleep sure. at the wheel and just blaze run around and let it. Yeah, just blaze through it. But to see the story, for me, it'd be worth it. But I think for a lot of people, like Josh especially, you don't care as much about the story. You certainly aren't looking to cry as much as I am. Maybe your beard is. I don't know why I have to make a beard reference every show. That's to this show. But again, same thing that what you're talking about, though, is it enough for me to really want to go through to see the third playthrough if I know the second one's going to be painful?
Right.
Yeah. Well, at this point of the show, I think we can just kind of open it up to anything else you guys might want to talk about in the game. You know, I don't know if you guys maybe want to talk about the music.
Oh,
or maybe
we have
talk
to mention
about
the music.
You want to talk
great.
About that?
Wait, dude, the there's certain things in this game that really tell me, like, this is a very well done, extremely artistic game. Number one, the music is so good and so out of place sometimes. You know what
Not
I mean?
Not a like, traditional score.
No, but no, it's amazing. Yeah. But you'll just be running around this old, barren, desolate city, and then like this angelic, like soundtrack kicks in and it's like
a band.
What? Yeah, like band what is playing. Happening? Like what is this? But then it's so good at the same time. Like I want to download this and listen to it on my AirPods. You know what I mean? Like just like hear it just in the background or something.
It so, almost felt like if you're doing homework or something like that, or you're doing work and you put your iPod, you put your earbuds in and you're just listening to random music while you're doing something else. Like that's kind of how it felt. And am I wrong on this, but was there not music playing 100% of the time you're playing this game? Was there always music?
If there was, I don't remember. And I think it kicks in at certain parts.
I felt like there was always music.
I could be wrong. Maybe I just didn't notice it. So yeah, the original soundtrack on this is phenomenal, in my opinion. It really adds something to the game, even though it's very odd when it happens and or where it happens, but it just, I don't know, it kind of does something for me. And then we kind of touched on this, but the camera angles, this game did some phenomenal stuff with different camera angles and just making the game feel different at times. Paul, you mentioned it. You know, this is an open world third person, you know, action RPG where you're dashing and running around and jumping up on buildings and floating down and, you know, but then all of a sudden it'll go to like a 2D side scroller where you're running around a giant factory tower. You know, and then doing it like that, or a sequence where you're in an amusement park and it's open world and you're running around. And then it's this weird 2D sequence where the camera's super zoomed out and your character's like a half inch tall on the screen. And you can just see this massive factory in the background or something, you know, or you're flying around in a mech suit, like a Gundam wing, you know, and then it's like, so then there's that perspective. It's just, it does some very neat things. It was almost a little jarring at first because I'm like, wait, what? Like, what? Why am I 2D all of a sudden? But then as you play the game, you start to kind of put it all together. And then you go, dude, somebody had a very artistic touch when they were making this game. And it makes it wholly unique, in my opinion, in that regard.
Yeah, I very early on was enthralled by the way the cameras moved. At first, it was frustrating. Because when I, you know, remember the first hour I talked about where I didn't want to play the game? I'm like, I'm so confused. Why? Oh, I want to go that way. I can't go that way. I got to go side to side now. But then later on, I realized that it was part of how they changed the combat and made things a little more fresh. Because like we said, the combat does not very much. It's not very complex. But the camera angles made it so you're almost playing a different game inside the same game every once in a while, which I liked. Something I wanted to mention about what I noticed is there's some pretty good hilarious side quest action. I won't spoil a whole lot, but you know, Pascal's Village, there's a robot who wants you to pass love notes around, which is funny. The philosopher guy, there's a character named Donkey who's in the desert. That's not really the character's name, but I can't say the character's
that's the G word. Donkey.
Yeah, that's the rated
very
G
random
name.
That a character has that name, by
right,
the way.
Right. Yeah. And she's very condescending, and she almost reminded me of GLaDOS from Portals, because she really just wants to see you fail. She keeps making you try to do things, which was interesting. But I don't know, I wanted to ask you guys this. Did you notice, because I the good thing about this game is the side quests are not long. It's not like you're going to go off and do something for 6 hours. That's a side quest. You pretty much, if you pick up a side quest, it's run out and find these things. You're going to probably find them as you go out anyways, and then come back and just pass them to the quest giver. But did you guys notice there was an event that happens like 2/3 of the way through the game where you fail all of your side quests? And I was really disappointed about that, because I had like at one point like 26 side quests going. Something happens and they don't give you a warning, all of your side quests are failed, and I'm like, oh, that's a bummer. I guess I'm just gonna do main storyline now. I don't know if you guys ran across that or not.
I did not. No, I didn't. I did some side quests, but you're much more of a side quest person than I am. I think I did a handful of them, but yeah. I didn't get 26 by any means.
Yeah, I'm usually Mr. Side Quest, and I only did one because I was like, I don't know how long this game is.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I can finish it. And so I did just, I think, one or two of the very early side quests. They didn't really seem to give you anything crazy important, and I kind of just ignored them from that point on.
No, I learned early on that I was doing it just for the story, and that's it. Because some funny things that happened in the side quests, but then you're getting 1,000 gold here and there, which you kill a couple of robot aliens, Humpty Dumpties anyway. In the desert, you get that anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I was going to bring up, since Michael did mention the self-destruct option, the game does let you press both your thumbsticks and self-destruct. I assumed that would kill me. I never used it once during the entire game.
I thought you'd have to at some point.
After after I was done playing, well, yeah, you do technically self-destruct in the story, but it's not when you're controlling characters, it's during a cutscene early on. That's not a late game spoiler by any means. So then when I finish the game, I do what I always do. I start reading reviews. I start watching videos on YouTube to see what other people think about these games, because I try to avoid as much as I can. And I immediately notice that there's hundreds of videos of 2B self-destructing. And I'm like, oh, that I must have missed something really cool in this game. And without getting too terribly graphic here, let's just say that 2B's skirt is apparently laced with C4. She can blow it up at any point, and it's a little revealing. Let's just say that. And there's a lot of creeps on YouTube, and maybe
she looks
just
like an aerobics instructor in a leotard after that. Yeah. That's gonna be
Buns
the
of steel.
That's gonna be the
Buns
friendly
of
way of flashbacks. Saying that.
Wow,
it's true.
Yeah,
it's true. There's an interesting following for this game, that's for sure, for some people.
Yeah, there's a lot of climbing on ladders as well. Do we want to get into endgame spoilers? Do we want to talk about that at all, or do we just want to leave that on the side?
I maybe let's not completely spoil it for people that might play it, but we can talk about how this game gets a little deep sometimes.
Maybe just some of the themes at the very end.
Like, you know, as you do the playthroughs, you have, they call them routes. You have route A, that's your first playthrough. Then you have route B, you play as 9S. And we've kind of talked about, that's really the same as route A with just a couple exceptions. Then you get into route C, D, and E. And that's where the game really starts to get deep. You know, there you do meet another android. Man, this is going to be really hard without big spoilers, but I don't want to spoil stuff.
Don't spoil it for me either, because I want to keep playing.
Yeah, and so you do meet other androids. There is some back history. You get these discoveries as you play the game. But the whole time, these routes are giving you glimpses into certain things that are happening. And the story that you feel like is unfolding doesn't completely unfold until you get to Route E, which is the actual true final ending of the game. And so that is where you get the payoff. You get the reveal, you get the twist, you get all that stuff. It's very, very cool. You can read tons of stuff on the internet about it. This has created a ton of discussion, but this is where you get into some of these choices that you have to make, and your choices actually matter. And there is a part where the game actually asks you to make a choice. Are you willing to do this? And if you do, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it deletes everything in the game.
Well, like, yes,
you know,
and I think, without being overtly spoilerish, but to where people out there who have played it understand what happens in the end of the game, they do a very good job earlier in the game where they tell you, if you're connected to the internet, you can see where other players have died, and you can loot those bodies and they will give you items, or you can attempt to repair it and it will run around and fight on your side. And so as you continue down these routes, the game really hits on certain themes like suffering. You know, to exist means a cycle of life and death. And you're fighting against that. The game talks about, is that a curse? You know, why would that be put on us, and not being happy about it? And then it does start to dive into certain themes about how you can work together as a team. And so there are certain things that you can do that will actually impact the game for other people, which is very clever. And this game really does something very unique with the end credits at the very end of the game in Route E, where it continues to advance the story, because there's still a playable element as the credits roll, which is kind of neat, because normally you hit the credits and you just want to skip them.
Right.
Some games will let you do things like Smash Brothers. I remember you can like fight the end credits, and there's some goofy stuff like that. But this game really builds on that idea in a very neat way, and it also builds a sense of connection and community with other Nier Automata players that I'm not sure any other game has ever really tapped into.
Yeah, if you want a fun action RPG with a very neat artistic style, play the game once or twice. If you want that, like, I really want that deep thought, I want the payoff of the twist and the big reveal, and I want to cry a little bit, maybe, like Michael would want
that's
to.
That's me.
That's where you want to play through Route E. You know, and it's going to take some effort. Don't get me wrong. But that's where the big payoff is. And like I kind of said in the beginning, I think that's where people go from this was a fun game to, wow, this game really touched me. It's memorable. You know, some people call it a masterpiece in that regard. So it's kind of like, what do you want and what are you willing to put in to get to that point?
Well, and it's almost even more than that. It's almost like, as I look online, there's almost an entire school of philosophy behind Nier Automata. Like, people have really in-depth discussions as though this is a real thing. But it kind of is, because it hits on a lot of humanity, even though there's no humans in the game, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah. It's very clever. If you only play it once for Route A, you're probably leaving the game saying, it's pretty good. And you're probably wondering what all the what all the fuss is about the game. If you get all the way through Route E, that's where you can kind of see, oh, this game's actually striving to do a lot. And it'll certainly be a lot to chew on, a lot to think about. This is a game that definitely sticks with you after you finish it. It's hard to just put it down and forget about. It has some very memorable themes and moments, especially at the end.
Yep.
All right, well, we're an hour into the episode here. That's a lot of what we think about the game. Josh, I understand you have pulled up some community reviews.
I have been a good host, and I did my job and pulled up reviews, so I'm not scrambling on this one. But yes, so we've kind of broken down our thoughts on the game. We'll get into how we rate the game here in a little bit, but we always like to give different perspectives, right? Everybody's a little bit different, and so if we read some reviews from the community, some good ones, some bad ones, it kind of just helps to kind of give you an idea of what Nier Automata is about as a whole. So that's what we're going to do. This first review is recommended. They have 178 hours on record, and they say, "This game is the most beautiful, heartwarming, and heartbreaking story I have ever experienced. This first playthrough is like a warm blanket and then a cold morning. Every route experience from then on are breathtaking and emotion-provoking. Please, if you get this game, play the game more than once. Every time you play, the ending will be different, and each playthrough expands massively on the last. This game has touched my soul. I have fallen in love with the lore of this world."
I think a lot of people would say that exactly.
Yep.
Yep, because it's very true. You know, you got to kind of put in the effort on this one to get the payoff. All right, so this next one is not recommended, 39 hours on record. And it says, "The biggest problem with this game is how backloaded everything is. Route A and B have very shallow plots, and B is 70% a retread of A. C is where some interesting stuff actually happens, and by then you're probably sick from running through the repeated assets twice in a row. Nier 1 did this, but the new content was all in one big chunk at least, rather than switching between new, recycled, etc. A and B could have easily been combined and just had you switch perspectives when necessary and merged, moved, or cut a few scenes."
1,000%. But Route 2, or Route B, of this game is such a colossal misstep.
It's worthless. It's a waste of time. Yeah, it really is. Because you have this amazing thing that is waiting for people to,
right around the corner.
Yes. And it's like, but you put this roadblock in front of gamers to say, hey, you have to grind. You have to play combat that's not nearly as fun as Route A. You have to go through the same story, the same locations, and have less fun doing it, except for maybe 30% of the time where you're actually playing as Nines and seeing things you haven't seen before. Like, why did you do that to me?
Maybe that's weird. The point, though. Maybe the whole point of it is,
are we willing to cut through it?
Like to have like a hidden passage in there. Like, essentially the game is complete if you play it all the way. You play the 20 hours to complete the whole game, right? It's a good enough game. It's a fun hack and slash, but maybe you have to get through the pain to get to the real payoff. I don't know. Maybe I'm just
there's a little bit of truth in that, but yeah, I still think that Route B is just such a misstep. I don't get it.
I agree with you. Okay, and this next one is recommended. It says 4 hours on record, but I've seen a lot of these type lower hour reviews, so I think this is people that played, because this was a console exclusive and then became a PC port. I think a lot of these lower hour ones are people that actually have played through the game because they seem to know what they're talking about, but their hours don't reflect it so much. So anyway, this is recommended. It says, "Be me. start playing the game. Get bodied in the tutorial mission. Have to use all my starting healing items. Finish tutorial mission. Barely. Get released into the world. Immediately try to fight a moose. Die. 10 out of 10 game.
Those starting moose are rough when you start out. They become easy later.
I know. I was like, what the heck is this moose, man? Yep.
Well, they're like level 12 or something in the very beginning. Yeah, they're pretty rough.
Well, I had to be like me, the first thing you do is go attack a moose. I'm like, I can kill the moose. Let's go kill. Oh, no.
I had to pick that one just due to both of y'all's difficulties in the tutorial mission there.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. And then this last review, this is not recommended. 8 hours on record. And it says, boring. Really painfully boring. The concept and the premise are both extremely interesting. The music is great. The art direction also. Characters are really charming in my opinion. But gameplay wise, this is the same old garbanzo we've been fed for over a decade. Get quest at point A, go to point B, defeat some dudes, retrieve quest item. Long way back to point A through a vast open world that's beautiful, but a bore to traverse. Rinse and repeat. Combat could have been something like Metal Gear Rising or Bayonetta, but they really dropped the ball and made the combat so boring when the story and setting allow for some kick butt engagement. I literally only ever booted up when I have nothing else to do with my time. At least the characters are hot.
So, nice.
There's a touch of truth to this, and we touched on that this is not, you're not playing this game for the combat alone. You know, you're not playing this game for any one specific thing, I guess. Like, as a whole, they do come together, but I get this guy's complaints in that the open world's barren, man. Like, again, maybe that's on purpose. Maybe we're seeing a Earth that's just desolate at this point, but these zones suck, man. I did not have fun in any of these zones. Did you guys? Like, was there any of them that you were wow, this area is gorgeous, or this is super interesting or cool? Like, in the city one, You know, even if you can go into a building, it's a completely empty room. There's literally nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no furniture. There's no, like,
no debris.
Right. They could have done so much more with the world to really flesh it out. And I just felt like that was a missed opportunity as well. It's a minor complaint. I'm not slamming the game for that, but it's kind of like,
it's the year 12,000. There's going to be no furniture left.
Maybe. Like I said, maybe it's intentional.
But the game is filled with buildings and you can't enter any of them. There's a lot in this game where it looks like I should be able to go in there and check that out, or maybe there's something waiting, and you really can't. Sometimes you can run along the rooftops, and you might find a box to open here or there, but yeah, there's not as much in the open world as you might want.
I think it's not really an open world. It's like it's almost guiding you. It's an action game where you're guided down a path, similar like Tomb Raider games, where it's not really open world. There's open areas here and there, but it's
not like a Breath of the Wild open world or a Skyrim where you can just wander around and find things to do.
It's linear where you can revisit. It's kind of like that.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's
But the areas were small anyways, so that's why I didn't get bored with it. I'm like, it's all small. It's a small open world, so...
Yeah. All right, so that's some of the community reviews. We've kind of hinted on some of our thoughts on the game. This is the point where we try to guess the overall score, which will give a little bit of insight into how maybe we're going to rate this game personally. But what do you guys think on the Steam rating scale of 0 to 100? What do you think the overall rating for this game is?
No idea, pass.
I believe Josh is the reigning champ, so you get to guess first.
Oh, yeah, I had a pretty bad intro to the other one. my guess on this, I guess 91. I'll explain that, you know, here in a little bit, but I think that there was an awful lot to like about this game. I think it misses on a few things, but I think overall this is a very unique, memorable type game, and I felt like the community would probably respond positively to that. So I went kind of high, and I said 91%.
Go 90, Michael.
Paul, you guys going to sandwich me? Michael goes 90, Paul goes 92.
Paul went last time, so I'm going to bite my tongue and wait.
All right, that's fair
enough. Because I was going to go 90.
I have lost this game so many times in a row now. I feel like I used to win this a lot.
You did,
I've lost like 7 in a row. I think this game has a very strong cult following. I don't know that the masses are going to love it quite as much. I do also know from reading one article, despite trying to avoid anything about Steam ratings, I did read what you mentioned earlier, Josh, that the port did have issues that were not fixed for quite some time. So I bet that drove it down just a tad. I'm going to say 87%.
All right. So 87 from Paul, 91 from me, Michael.
I was actually going to go lower because I think a lot of people will hate this game and a lot of people will love it. I didn't even think about the port in there. So 82.
82 from Michael. Oh, boy.
Do we have a tie?
Nope. But it was real close because the actual overall rating is 85%. So, Paul, you won. Your slump is over.
Yes. Despite going second.
I was going to do the dirty thing and just be like, 86. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but I was like, I want to try and actually guess.
I will say this. A majority of the negative reviews were because of how bad the PC port was.
Gotcha.
It was very hard to filter those negative reviews into people that actually had complaints about the game itself. 90% of the negative reviews on this were, hey, this PC port is terrible and it's taking them forever to fix it. In contrast, the recent reviews, because Steam always breaks it down overall and recent, the recent reviews are actually at 93%. So you can see how people responded when the PC port was working properly and had the bugs resolved and stuff. So
before we hear Paul work his magic, sure. Did you guys play this game? Because I didn't even think about the fact that it was PC since I played it on the PlayStation. Did you guys play with mouse and keyboard or controller?
I played with controller 100%.
I started with mouse and keyboard just to get used to it. And I will say that running on mouse and keyboard is so much easier because all you have to do is double tap W and you're sprinting. When you use a controller, having to hold down the trigger to sprint was kind of bananas.
You guys had to
because,
hold it down?
Yeah.
Oh, I just tapped it once.
Is there a toggle option?
No, I just tapped it once and she would dash and then she would run. Yeah.
Maybe I held it down. I didn't have to.
Yeah,
maybe,
I never
maybe
held
I'm
it
just
down.
An idiot.
I thought the sprint was awesome because I'm like, this works as a dash or it works as the run button, which I thought was brilliant. Oh. I'm like, I love this.
I always held it down and maybe I didn't need to.
You just tap it and she runs. But she
well,
dashes
still,
first,
I don't like
then
it.
Then no, she slowly gains speed.
The longer you hold it, the faster she
gets. The faster you run.
No, but I didn't have to hold it. I literally tapped it, and then she would start out slower, and then go faster, 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 faster. Yeah. Mm. And I would just tap it.
Maybe I could have rebound keys, but it should always be just click in the left thumbstick. Why is that not sprint? That should always be sprint.
Because that's recenter the... Oh, that was flashlight.
That was flashlight. Yeah,
that was flashlight.
That's right.
For those cave levels. Yeah.
Which, by the way, the flashlight was almost useless.
Yeah, and it should just auto turn on when you're underground, and that would have taken care of that button.
Then you got a run button.
All right, Paul. All right. Ooh, well, you're back to being champion.
I'm back.
You get to introduce this next segment in only the way that Paul can.
All right, DJ, spin that record. Hey there, Miss 2B. If you were on Star Trek, your phaser would be set to stun. All right, this segment is Make Love, Marry, or Murder. This is where all three of us give the game a rating. Is this game marriage material? It's worth picking up. You can spend a ton of hours. It's worth beating. And we highly, highly recommend it. Or is the game Make Love? Where it's, maybe it's worth picking up if the price is right and you can pick it up for a while and have fun. But maybe it's not long-term material. Or is this a game that is worth murdering? All right. I feel like I want to know what Josh thinks of this game. What are you going to rate this game, Josh?
Am I starting to be the wild card? That's what I want. I really want to be the wild card guy where it's like, dude, I have no idea if Josh loves this game, hates this game, what, man.
I used to be the wild card. I miss being the wild card.
Yeah, no. For me, there is a lot to like about this game. I don't think I ever dreaded picking this game up and playing it. I also feel like it's very memorable. This is a game that even if I'm not insanely crazy about it, I still am going to remember it for a long time. I do enjoy it an awful lot. I think it misses on a couple things and those hurt it a lot. I think having to play through it multiple times is a huge miss. I'm not really sure why they went that route. I would much, much just have rather them say, hey, this is a 30-hour game, and the more you play it, the more you get the payoff and the reward on it. So for me, that was a huge ordeal there. This is an easy make love for me. It's not quite a marry, just because there are a few flaws to it. The combat's not great. the world is bland. There's that whole thing with the multiple playthroughs and having to basically do almost everything you just did for another 10 hours. That really bugs me. So there's a few things that keep it from being a Mary for me, but it's an easy make love in my opinion. I think this is a very unique game. I think it did a lot right. It's very, very memorable. When you get into some of the philosophical stuff, man, that's where it really stands out to me. It's one of those things where it reminds me of like Subnautica or Outer Wilds, where it's like you could talk about this game with people for a very long time and have in-depth conversations about it. But from a gameplay perspective, I feel like it's just kind of middle of the ground in that opinion. So easy make love, definitely not a Mary.
Michael?
I was hoping for something spicier from Josh. I think make love is just so, it's like, nah, I'm going to go the safe route on that one. That's not me throwing shade. I mean, maybe it is kind of. I hated this game when I first started playing it. And now I am absolutely marrying this game. I love this game. This was one of my favorite games I played in the last 10 years, which is ridiculous because I hated this game. I didn't want to play it. I didn't like the first hour at all, enough to where I broke my own rule. I'm like, I'm going easy mode just to get through this real fast. Here's what I love about this game. It was $20. I got a lot of experience out of it. I got surprised a whole bunch about the fact that it's not just an action game. It's not just an action RPG. I love the fact that the combat is button mashy, and that's so stupid to say that, but sometimes you just don't want to have to go and Elden Ring a game. You want to have fun and get through a story. The action was nonstop. You didn't have any downtime. Yeah, the world's a little bit barren, but you weren't in that world for very long because the next time that you got to another point in the story, you were fighting another Goliath or fighting another boss or fighting Adam or Eve. There was almost no time where you were not button mashing, having a great time, and being enthralled by the story, which was a lot more. It was like an onion, man. At first, you're like, this is an onion. This is a game that I hate. I hate you, onion, even though onion's a vegetable.
It smells bad.
I love onions.
Makes you cry.
Yeah, it makes you cry. But I don't know. I don't know why I like this game so much. It hit everything on me. It was a fun action game where it wasn't super hard, but if you play on a harder mode, it's hard enough, you know what I mean, where you had to, I mean, Paul and Josh will have y'all think that it's like, it's just literally just keep tapping circle. There's a little more to that, you know what I mean?
It's a lot more than that.
It's more to that. It's definitely a game that does have challenge, but it's not trying to get in way over its head on let's make it so complicated that it's a pain in the bum all the time to play. I like how easy the chip system is. It's nice to not have to go through 9 different things of like, I've got perks, I've got skills, I've got weapon upgrades, I've got armor upgrades, I've got different materials in my armor, I've got chainmail, I've got plate, I've got leather. It's like, this is cut and dry, go have fun, go fight bosses, and then also get surprised by the story. And unfortunately, I'm the person that will go through all 5 playthroughs. Josh, we were talking about this a couple days ago, how you're looking for a game that you can play on your own and just play as like, hey, this is my game that is my single player, just play, not for the podcast. I tell you, this game for that is me. I will keep playing it, and I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it, and I'll go through the second playthrough, yes, thinking, okay, it's a little bit lame because I've got to do this again, but I want the payoff of knowing the story. I want to see it, and I want to cry, and I think it might get me there. And so I don't know why I love this game so much, except for the 94 reasons I just said. So I don't know why I said I don't know why, but I love this game. I'm marrying it.
Nice.
Paul, what do you got?
You know, for me, this one kind of teeters between marry and make love. I think that it's a must-play game, but I think that there are stretches that definitely lull. It's far from a perfect game, but it's so unique and it has such a fresh narrative take. Like, you can read a book, or you can watch a movie, or you can play a video game, and all of them are a little different, right? And so it's like, what works best for a video game? And the themes that this game explores at the end lend itself so well to a video game, because if you have to experience suffering, you can read that in a book and it's only going to relate so much, and you can watch it on a movie and it'll hit you a little harder because you have the visual element. But when you're holding a controller, fighting what feel like impossible battles at the end of the game, that is a very clever way to make you understand what it's like to suffer. So I think that this game really marries combat with storytelling in a very clever way. I think everyone should pick it up and play it. But if you do, you have to play it through all the way. If you just play Route A, this game would probably be a murder for me. But because it's so clever in the late game, I don't really know where to land, whether that's a marry or a make love. I guess ultimately I would say it depends on the price. Like, Michael only paid $20. If you buy it in Steam, it's a full $40. Now, the game's been around a while. You can buy a key from third-party sites that are going to be a lot cheaper. I think if the price is $20 or less, absolutely it's a must-buy. You have to play it. If it's $40, I almost say, like, just watch all the cutscenes on YouTube and you're probably going to experience everything. But ultimately, I'll say make love.
I love how difficult this was for you, Paul. Like, honestly, that tells you what this game has to offer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we all have given it a lot of praise in that regard. You know, I bordered on Mary, but gave it a make love. You bordered on Mary and gave it a make love, and Michael gave it a Mary. So it does tell you what this game has to offer for people. And we rarely fully agree on everything, you know? So there's something about this game that's just memorable.
Yeah. I think this game has very high highs and it has very low lows.
Yeah.
There are some games that just hit a 10 out of 10 for most of the game, and maybe it has slight lulls here or there. This game has pretty big chunks that are like, why am I doing this? Why did they program it this way? This could have been tightened up and made a lot better, especially with Route B. So, yeah, I think that's why I would ultimately say make love. But I still think it's a must-play game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so we've got one segment left on the show. Let's go to the leaderboard and see where this game stacks up. All right, Michael, in case there's anyone out there who's listening to the show for the first time, you want to tell them how the leaderboard works?
Yes. So what we do is we've got these video games and they're all in a giant list, right? And it's on our website. So if you go there, you can follow along right now. But essentially, any game that we deep dive goes in this list. And so essentially, all three of us are going to kind of rank it where we think it should be. And we're going to find a place that works as our consensus. So if you listen to a deep dive about a month ago, actually, on an incredible video game called Elite Dangerous that I said was my favorite game on the entire list.
An incredibly bad game.
Others in this room disagreed, and we had to find a place to rank it. But essentially what you're seeing is our consensus ranking of all the games that we have deep dived.
We've never figured out the past tense.
Deep dove. Yeah. So it's essentially just a giant list of all the games we've deep dived. It gets one longer every single time we do a deep dive because we're doing one game at a time. There are 73 games on here, and right now we're going to figure out where this game ranks in this deep dive list. That's a very long way to explain it, but I did it, guys.
That's perfect. And then just to let you know, a couple of the games that are on here, we've got some stuff like Splitgate coming in at 18. We've got Resident Evil Village at 25. We've got Far Cry 5 at 34. We've got Little Nightmares 2 down at 45. And then even lower, we've got some stuff like Human Fall Flat at 60. And Battlefield 2042 Dead Last at number 73. Looking here at the leaderboard, what are you guys thinking for this game? Because I think for me, this would fall... Well, like, let's compare it to V Rising. Would you have this above or below V Rising, which was the last deep dive?
I put it above.
I would put it above.
That one came in at 29.
It's way more memorable.
Yeah, I'd put it far above.
I would not put it far above.
I mean like 5 or 6 above.
I think 29 gets us pretty darn close to where I would want it.
Yeah,
I would actually agree.
It's
a half inch above V Rising for me. V Rising's combat and the blood altar and the boss systems, I think, are far better than any of the combat you get in Nier Automata. But maybe that's just me. The story, though, I think kicks it up a notch. I would have a real hard time putting this above Weird West, which
I was going to ask as a marker for you, Paul. Like, would you put it below Weird West?
I would put it below. I'd put it in between Weird West and V Rising. So I'd have it maybe in the late 20s if it were up to
me. I'm actually spot on with you, to be honest with you. Now, we rated the game the same way too, so Michael might be a little bit higher than us, but yeah, it's a great game. I think it deserves to be high on the leaderboard. And so, you know, I think that's where are you at, Michael?
Weird West is hard for me where it is because I think it's way too low. And that's because I did make love to it when I played it. And, you know, now a month and a half removed, I'm still thinking that Weird West needs to be significantly higher. So I'm going to remove Weird West from the equation in my ranking.
Sure.
I want to put it somewhere between...
above or below Forgotten City, because you love Forgotten City.
I know, and that Forgotten City is what I'm looking at. I'm staring at Forgotten City right here.
And that's 22.
I think I want to put it right there with Forgotten City. Whether it be above or below, I think it belongs right in there. I also think Lost Ark hasn't aged well, so that needs to come down. I think that it's all convoluted on certain parts of here. I would probably put it somewhere in the low to mid 20s is where I'd like to have it. I think it goes above Deep Rock Galactic. I want to ignore Weird West because it doesn't belong where it is. Forgotten City, I would put it... The thing about Forgotten City is it's so short. And this game has so much replayability. But it's so memorable to me. So I want to put it right in there with Forgotten City.
I think we might need to do a leaderboard shakeup relatively soon because Lost Ark is looking kind of high now at 20 in hindsight.
I just think the end game on that, once I got to the end, I just hated that game.
I'm not opposed to what Michael's saying either. It's just, this game's so unique. It's so memorable. It's not without its flaws and it's not without its dull points. You know what I mean? So it's not a perfect game, but it is a memorable game. It is a game that probably should be experienced by a lot of people. You know, and I'm fine anywhere from the early 20s to the late 20s, but I think it belongs in there somewhere.
I'd put it 23 or 22, bumping the Forgotten City down one or leaving it there and bumping Rainbow Six Siege down, which I've never played.
I found the Forgotten City to be a more enjoyable experience all the way through, which granted might be because it's a short game, but I'm more inclined to put it below. So what if we just put it in at 23, right below 23. Forgotten City and works above for Rainbow Six Siege, which is just too sweaty.
I think that's great.
23 works for me.
23, we'll plug it in there. All right, perfect. So for anyone out there who's curious to know what our next deep dive will be, we always do a deep dive every other week. So 2 weeks from today, we will be deep diving The Quarry, which is very similar to Until Dawn. If you're familiar with that game, same developers. It's essentially an interactive movie. I think that will be a blast to talk about. And just to close out the show here, just as a reminder, we have that community night for trivia coming up on July 1st. Please come join us for that on our Discord server.
It's going to be epic.
It'll absolutely be epic.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And you might win a Steel Series controller out of it, which would be awesome. And also, if you want to support us on Patreon and you want those additional episodes while also helping fund our show, go to multiplayersquad.com and you can see all the Patreon options there. And I think that's it for today. Thank you everyone for listening. It was a blast. I hope that you all go out and play Nier Automata for yourself, or at least check it out on YouTube. And then that's it. We'll see you guys for our next episode this Thursday for This Week in Gaming. And until then, happy gaming, everybody. We'll see you next time.
This is the last time that I get to say Domo Arigata, Mr. Nier Automata. I messed it up. I'm out of here, guys. Cheers. Good night.
See you, everybody.
Be well.
Oh, bye.